Today's guest will be Mike Rivero, former employee of NASA and Hollywood special effects guru, currently the webmaster for WhatReallyHappened.com. We'll be talking about the real motivations behind war and intervention, banking institutions, the propaganda about Iran, what the end goal is, and what you can do about it. Mike's been a long-standing radio host for the What Really Happened show, which was recently hosted on RBN. He's no longer with the RBN network, so I'll be asking him where he's going from there, where his new show's going to be, what future projects does he have up his sleeve. And then we'll be talking about the imperial state, the fascist state of the U.S., which has been hijacked by a bunch of central banking buffoons, how much trouble the dollar is in, the inefficiency and waste in military spending, the deceptive way credit rating agencies actually give out ratings and why, movements around the world to tell the IMF to stick it, a way out of this mess, and a whole lot more, so stay tuned. Okay, so people are curious because everyone loved the What Really Happened radio show on RBN, and they'd love to have you back, and they want to know what's going on, so I have to ask you about that. Will we see a new show, or what's going on?
Yeah, there'll be a new show. I've already got all kinds of offers coming in. I'm going to take a week or so to look at what's coming in and try and pick the best opportunity. I need, obviously, a professionally run network where I'm free to focus on the show content and show quality and not deal with other issues. I need to work with people who you can rely on to keep their promises about certain things. And there was a lot of deliberate obfuscation of information about RBN. I could never get reliable audience numbers. I could never get reliable information about the affiliates. And there was just way, way too much secrecy going on over there. And I'm a professional. I'd like to be treated like a professional. So I'm looking at a couple of different offers right now that have come in. Some of them actually do have dollar signs attached to them. Not big dollar signs, but dollar signs attached to them. But between now and when I go back on the air, and it is inevitable I will go back on the air. There's no question about that. But between now and then, I want to catch up on some projects that have been languishing because doing the radio show, as you already know, it's not just the 3 hours a day I was on the air. It's 3 to 4 hours before that where I'm doing prep and writing jokes and commentary and putting all of that together. I have a huge backlog of music and video editing to go with my wife's musical compositions. I'm getting caught up on that this week. A couple of other projects that have been languishing. And, of course, I've got these two ebooks that I've been trying to get finished. And as you probably know, you need to have large open blocks of time to focus and work on something. If you're just doing a few sentences here and a few sentences there, the resulting work, it doesn't flow. It lacks continuity and it doesn't read very well. So I want to put some focus on that.
People always tell me they can tell when I'm writing a book or something because I disappear from YouTube for a long time.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. You have to sort of become obsessive about what you're writing about and have it all in your head at the same time and just let it flow on out onto that keyboard.
Well, what are the books about?
Well, the first book, and I've been talking about this one already, is called The Blueprint for the New America, and it is a compilation of concepts that we have talked about on the radio show and the website over the last several years about what kind of a nation we want to have here in the North American continent on the presumption, which looks pretty solid at this point, the current economic and governmental system is going to come crashing down. And the reason for the book is because we're already seeing people within the Federal Reserve, IMF, World Bank, ECB, they already know this Ponzi scheme is going to come crashing down. They're already having meetings about how they're going to sell relaunching the same banking scam after the crash is over. You know, like this time we'll do better. This time we can make it work. And of course, that's nonsense. You cannot over time make that model of economics work. It always strips the wealth from the people, puts it in the pocket of the bankers, until the entire system crashes and the bankers wind up owning everything. We're already seeing countries around the world like Hungary are realizing the time to get out of this failed experiment is now. This country fought a revolution to be free of that kind of banking. Then, of course, you've got the entrenched political power are going to want to be the entrenched political power for whatever new nation is going to come on up. So basically, Blueprint for the New America, much of it, of course, is drawn from our original Constitution and the first 13 amendments And it's basically saying we need to get back to a country that works for the people, because it's supposed to be our country. And we need to basically hardwire in some of the very painful lessons we've learned about allowing private interests, for-profit interests to become too powerful, about allowing the central government to become too powerful. The reason the founding fathers set up the United States with the power reserved to the states was to make it very difficult for corrupting influences to influence the nation as a whole. And of course, following the Civil War, when Washington, D.C. became this gigantic central federal authority, it turned it into a one-stop shopping center for all the corrupting influences in the country to come on in, bribe enough members of Congress to basically get whatever they wanted. And it's just been spiraling out of control ever since then, to where we find ourselves in the present situation. And it cannot last. They can't keep this thing going much longer. Obviously, I'm opposed to violence. I'm opposed to a violent revolution, because the wrong people are going to get killed in that.
When that happens, just you get something, the replacement's worse than the original.
Very often, which leads to another revolution. I mean, when we talk about the French Revolution, we talk about it as a singularity, but that's not exactly what happened. It was a series of multiple revolutions, because each new government would come in and say, oh, great, now we can act like the old government. The French people said, no, you cannot. And there was actually a whole series of revolutions before they finally got a government in there that said, we'd better do what the people want us to do, or we're going to be out of a job. So
we'll see how many it takes for Egypt.
The most recent one was definitely a counter coup, because Morsi was not playing ball with either the U.S. or Israel, and that's why they went in there and did that one. As far as here in the United States of America, there are going to be no end of well-funded carpetbaggers running around this country trying to restart private central banking, trying to restart the so-called traditional parties, basically try and pick up the pieces and restart the same scams and enslavement and tyranny all over again. And we just have to have a populace that is aware of these pitfalls. We need to look at what happened in the old Soviet Union when they collapsed. What did they do right? What did they do wrong? Obviously, the new Russian republics, with the demise of the Soviet Union, they've got one of the world's most powerful economies now. Their times are booming over there. Major reason is because Putin took state control of their central bank in order to turn their public currency back to a public utility, which is the same model the U.S. started with. As a result, we need to just be ready as American people to stand up and say, no, we're not going to go back and repeat the same things that led to this last disaster. And as I said, we reported this on the website last week. They're already holding meetings. Federal Reserve, IMF, ECB, World Bank, they're already holding meetings where they're saying, we know there's going to be a huge crash. We have to be prepared to restart private central banking and convince the people of these various nations that this is really a good idea. And they understand that more and more people have come to realize that it is that private central banking model that inevitably leads to impoverishment of the people and ultimately to wars. When you have a private central bank, ultimately it tries to balance the books with a war. And most people are now starting to realize, prior to the creation of the Federal Reserve, there was no such thing as a world war, and now we're into number three.
That's right. And you mentioned Hungary earlier, and like Eritrea, Hungary has paid off its debts to the IMF and basically kicked them out of the country.
Kicked out the Rothschilds banks. If you go and look at some of these countries that are being targeted by the U.S. right now, like Syria, for example, Syria has never borrowed any money from the IMF. They're not listed as debtors. The whole point of this war agenda is to force the world back onto Bretton Woods, force the world back onto the petrodollar, and force them to always be enslaved to debt to these private central bankers. And this private central bank system is a trap, because the instant that first pretty printed piece of paper goes into circulation, more money is owed to the bank than actually exists. And that's why it doesn't matter how hard the people work, how much they sacrifice, how much they surrender of their own personal work product, they can never get out of that debt, and the debt is used to control them. It is actually a modern embodiment of the old feudalism system.
I think that's the real nuclear threat with Iran, is if they have nuclear power, they free up their other resources to put on the world market, and they get out of debt and they have a super resource. Do you think the reason Israel went and bombed Syria for the fourth time was just to disrupt the peace talks between there? I think
is it tomorrow? It's Thursday, whatever that is in the U.S. time. My time zones are screwed up, but it would be the next round of talks between Iran and the U.S.
Well, let me back up to Iran. The point of the war on Iran, I mean, there's multiple agendas at work there. Obviously, Israel wants all regional challenges to its political power shattered into little tiny pieces. But from the point of view of the United States of America, the real goal, as it was with Iraq, is to force Iran's oil to be sold on the world market only for U.S. dollars. So other nations and around the world have to send products to the U.S. or borrow U.S. dollars at interest in order to get their oil. That's what led to the war in Iraq. 2002, the United Nations gave Saddam Hussein permission to sell Iraq's oil for the euro. 1 year later, the U.S. invades. They lynch Saddam. Iraq's oil is back on the market only for U.S. dollars. And a lot of people are saying, why did we bother invading Iraq when China is getting most of that oil? Well, China right now is having to pay for that oil in U.S. dollars. Now, hold on to that thought. We're going to come back to it. The situation in Iran, of course, is not only do they forbid usury, all funding is a loan plus a fee. There's no accumulating interest there. They have a state-controlled central bank, and that obviously is Wall Street's agenda, is to get them to go along with this model of private central banking issuing the public currencies a loan at interest. So that is the financial dimension to the war. Again, to bolster the petrodollar, ultimately the U.S. has to conquer every resource-rich area on the earth and get them to sell their oil only for U.S. dollars in order to prop up the petrodollar and the value of the dollar internationally to keep everybody on Bretton Woods. Now, this brings us to Saudi Arabia, because you've probably noticed over the last week, Saudi Arabia is breaking off diplomatic relations with the United States. We're being told it's because of Syria and Iran, and I don't think that's it at all. We have seen Saudi Arabia and China starting to get much, much closer together. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and suggest that Saudi Arabia is getting ready to walk on the petrodollar deal and sell their oil to China directly for the yuan, because they can take that yuan and send it back to China and get manufactured products, which they can't with the U.S. dollar. The U.S. doesn't really manufacture much of anything that anybody wants anymore. So those dollars are piling up and they don't know what to do with them.
Yeah, just and, weapons, it's all we make anymore.
Yeah, and not even very good ones at that. You know, yeah, some of the
planes
latest
that don't fly. You
know, planes, ships that won't work, ships that can't fight. This new stealthy destroyer.
Vehicles that can only carry six people.
the new USS Zumwalt, the new largest, most expensive destroyer the United States ever built, was supposed to be stealthy, and turns out it's not stealthy at all. And the original plan to buy 32 of them has now shrunk down to just three, for which they will ultimately pay the same price they had originally estimated for the first 32, which shows you how out of control that was. Now, I think the reason, getting back to what you asked about Israel and Syria, we know that the original game plan for Syria was a covert overthrow like they did down in Libya. But the hired mercenaries have not been able to oust Assad in going on 3 years. So the U.S. was trying to come up with a reason to directly invade and just get it over and done with and get on to Iran. And that's why they ginned up this nonsensical story that Assad gassed women and children of his own Alawite supporters virtually in front of U.N. chemical weapons inspectors on the day they showed up.
Who were there because of a previous gassing, which was carried
right,
out by the mercenaries.
Exactly right. And this time the U.N. inspectors were told, don't assign blame, just confirm the weapons were there. So they already knew which way this was really going to go. And this whole story fell apart because there was no motive for Assad to do something that stupid. It certainly did not achieve any military aim. It certainly didn't help him politically. And it has since come out, of course, that the rebels do, in fact, have these chemical weapons. There have been additional chemical weapon attacks by the hired mercenaries since that incident. So Vladimir Putin comes in. He reaches a deal with Assad to surrender and destroy all of Assad's chemical weapons. Can't get the same deal with the hired mercenaries. And they've achieved all the benchmarks. So basically that idea of, oh, they're gassing their own people, therefore we must invade, that the rug got pulled out from under that. So I think the reason Israel renewed their bombing campaign and were trying to be quiet about it was to bomb Syria and bomb Syria and bomb Syria until Syria retaliates, then scream, oh, Syria's attacking us without reason, and that opens the door to a U.S. invasion.
Which is exactly how the story would start. It would just say they did it without mentioning anything Israel done prior.
Yeah, then which is it's a very, very common, well-established pattern. But, of course, it came out that Israel did carry out the bombing. The U.S. confirmed it. And now Israel's just screaming, you know, this is no way for our ally to behave, to tell the world that we're bombing Syria and trying to provoke a war. So they're all very upset. And at this point, I think Obama, whether he's thinking about his legacy or he's just being practical, I think he realizes that taking this war agenda any further, they can't succeed. Forcing the world back onto Bretton Woods policies already failed because nations are leaving the dollar faster than the U.S. can invade them. And that's why Obama is supporting peaceful talks with Iran about their nuclear power program, and why he's basically backed off going into Syria. And we're seeing the Israel first. There's like John Bolton are out there. We must attack now. You know, Iran will have a nuclear bomb by 4 o'clock this afternoon. And they're back to that fear mongering, and they're not getting a lot of traction. I would not be surprised to see shortly after the first of next year a major concerted effort by the Israeli influenced media and politicians to actually impeach Obama and remove him from office, because that would put Joe Biden in the White House, who will do whatever Israel tells him to do. And I think the reason they will wait until after the first of the year is, under U.S. law, if Biden takes over the White House with less than half a term remaining, he can run for an additional two terms after that. And so I think after the first of the year, we're going to see the corporate media will finally start acknowledging all these Obama scandals that we've been talking about for years here in the independent media. And I really do think Israel's decided to give Obama the old heave-ho. I don't think they're desperate enough to try an assassination with a very skeptical, suspicious world watching them. But I don't think there's a lot of people who would be all that upset if Obama were legally removed from his position.
No, and it's ironic because the hardline policies from both Bush and Obama were putting sanctions on Iran, which didn't completely work because the Asians refused to do it, but it's actually led to them not selling oil on the dollar, because the Japanese are buying 20% of their oil and gas from Iran in yen, and the Chinese are using yuan, and India was using gold for a while.
So. Yeah, that's the amazing thing. The only ones really being hurt by the Iran sanctions are the United States and Europe. And even some of the European countries have applied for and very quietly received exemptions from the sanctions. So, now Israel firsters in Congress are back out there saying, you know, all sanctions everywhere, blockade them. They're just trying to push forward, because this war to force the world back onto Bretton Woods, it's an all or nothing deal. If they can't get the entire world back onto Bretton Woods, then everybody's just going to go do business with that half of the world that isn't going through the dollar and isn't giving the United States a piece of the action of all commerce on the globe. Because that's what it comes down to. The United States has been operating like a mafia crime family for almost 75 years, well, more than that, 100 years now, because the Federal Reserve Act, by forcing Americans to conduct all business only using currency borrowed at interest from that private central bank gets a piece of the action of everything that goes on in America. When you buy a cheeseburger, when you buy a newspaper, when you go to a movie or a sporting event, that currency you're using is accruing interest to that private central bank. They get a piece of the action of your life. And what the Federal Reserve did to the American people, Bretton Woods did to the rest of the world. Because when the dollar became the international trade and banking currency, for anybody to be in international trade and banking, the first thing they had to do was go to the Federal Reserve and borrow a bunch of U.S. dollars at interest.
And we've seen not only that they're getting a piece of everything, but they're enabling all their buddies at the top. They keep economic mobility from anybody ever challenging the upper crust, because as we all saw during the 2011 audit of the Fed, they spent, this is separate from the government, but the Fed dished out over $16 trillion up to Bank of America and all these financial institutions completely in secret.
And of course, all that additional cash, creates inflationary pressures on the money that we already have in our pocket. And anytime you see the rise of tyranny, it does crush down the people below it. It takes away all their wealth in order to keep them helpless and unable to fight back. And usually the middle class is targeted. And every tyranny in history has targeted the middle class, because it is from the middle class that opposition to oligarchy will always arise. It's not just you know, law of nature or coincidence that it is the middle class of the United States that has mostly been hammered by recent legislation. And there is, I don't know if you've heard about this in Japan or not, but this last week, the Congress passed a new bill which took off all restrictions on bailouts for derivatives trading. Now, for those in your audience who don't understand what I'm talking about, because a lot of people still don't understand what derivatives are and why they were the major problem back in 2008 and continue to be a major threat now. Derivatives are financial transactions that are based on other financial transactions, hence the name derivative. One of the most abused is the credit default swap, which is basically an insurance policy that I take out on an investment. And there are differences between credit default swaps and regular insurance. Regular insurance is regulated. I can only insure an asset that I personally own. I can insure my home for fire, but I can't insure my neighbor's home against fire because obviously it's going to give me a motive to sneak over there in the middle of the night with a can of gasoline and a match and set fire to his place.
Plus,
and you have
multiple parties all betting on the same one asset. You, if it does burn, you have to pay all the parties.
That you're getting exactly into the problem I was going to mention about. Regulated insurance, of course, has to keep cash reserves on hand to pay a reasonably expected number of claims. They're not allowed to sell policies that they can't pay off if the claims come in. That's part of the regulation. Derivatives are not regulated, and they just got deregulated a little bit more this last week. In a derivative, in a credit default swap, they were set up originally so that when I invest $10 million in a venture, I can buy a credit default swap. So if the venture fails, I get at least a part of my $10 million investment back, or maybe all of it. There's no limits on how many of these things you can buy. But you can also buy credit default swaps against other people's investments. And what was really amazing is, I'll give you one example. Goldman Sachs was paid a lot of money by the state of California to sell California bonds and then turned around and was selling credit default swaps against the California bonds, betting they were going to collapse, which they ultimately did. So they're playing both ends against the middle. Right now, Wall Street has sold an estimated $90 trillion worth of credit default swaps against Europe's debt. And this is the reason we see the Federal Reserve sending so much money over to Europe's banks to keep them solvent, because the instant Europe falls apart, the holders of those $90 trillion worth of credit default swaps are going to come pounding on the doors of Wall Street to be paid. Wall Street doesn't have the money. And this bill that was just passed through the Congress basically says that when the derivatives firestorm happens, Wall Street will turn around to the U.S. government and the U.S. government will turn around to the American people and say, you, the American people, have to come up with this $90 trillion to bail Wall Street out one more time. And by the way, this is classic fascism because under fascism, those who make money are allowed to keep it and those who lose money are allowed to dump those losses on the general population. That's what all these bailouts have been. That's what TARP was. We are living in a fascist economic state. We stopped being capitalist decades ago, and we have just deteriorated into outright fascist economic mode.
And a lot of those credit default swaps went through those SIV, security investment vehicle things, which Citigroup was principal in inventing that whole scam, and I think they were the highest recipient of the bailouts of anybody.
Yeah, it is.
And very guilty in the subprime lending, too.
Wall Street, in fact, the entire U.S. banking sector, we were all raised to think of banks as you put your money in the bank loans it out at interest, they get a piece of the action, you get a piece of the action. But depositor banking activity is now less than 10% of all activity of banks. Banks are just engaging in the speculative, manipulative practices to reap huge amounts of money to themselves. And when they get in trouble, they turn around and they do the bailout. Back in 2008, look at all the bailouts we've had. And all a bailout is, when the banks say, oh, we're now undercapitalized, we can't function. So the government says, all right, we're going to take $1 trillion away from the American people, and we're going to give it to you, the banks, so you, the banks, can then turn around and loan that $1 trillion back to the people we took it from at interest. That's all a bailout really is.
Mm-hmm. And they also got the rating agencies. They bribed them to lie and give AAA ratings to these CDOs, the packages of subprimes.
The mortgage-backed securities, absolutely. And that's the reason why we see across America so many pension funds are in trouble right now, because under the law, pension funds, anybody who's investing money on behalf of retired people, they have to be the safest possible investments. And pension funds, retirement funds are only legally allowed to invest in AAA rated securities. And so Wall Street's pet rating agencies, the only one who said this is a disaster is Egan Jones. And now the SEC has shut them down. So you had Wall Street's rating agencies were rating these mortgage bundles AAA. The pensions were buying them up. And they just got clobbered in the crash. And that's why you're hearing, you know, all this talk about, oh, these pensions for the firefighters and the police. And it's really costing us too much money because the people, the state government, don't have the balls to stand up and point the finger of blame where it really goes. Because in our current power concentrated political structure, people who are state legislators and state governors see those jobs merely as on the job training for their longed for promotions to Washington, D.C. And they really aren't thinking what's best for their state and their people. They're thinking, you know, how do I make the big leap up to Washington, D.C.? And
virtually a witch hunt for the few whistleblowers there were. About the, you know, faulty ratings, the Spitzer and people like that, they chased all after him with honey traps and everything else. But I think the credit rating agencies shouldn't have any credibility because they're the ones that gave these AAA ratings to this absolute garbage. And if you notice, like we were talking earlier about Hungary, who've kicked the IMF out, it's the same ones. It's Fitch and Moody and S&P. They're giving them these low, you know, B type, in between B and double B ratings for the country, like just the lowest you can get, really, without being complete.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's extortion. You know, go back into debt to us, or we will do everything we can to destroy your business. And this is an ongoing aspect of history that is never taught in our schools. And I touch on it quite a bit in my article, All Wars Are Bankers' Wars, and there's a video out that was made from it. Where basically what we're seeing, history is dominated by these private bankers doing any and everything to just make themselves more money. And they will assassinate presidents or try to assassinate presidents. They will start wars. They will destroy entire countries rather than let them operate without being enslaved to the bank. It's a very tyrannical system. And again, it's the reason the United States fought a revolution to be free of that kind of banking. And, of course, almost immediately, the private central bankers came back in. They were throwing money around. They got themselves the first bank of the United States. And immediately, it threw the general population of the United States into extreme poverty, and the bankers were making huge amounts of money. So in 1811, Congress refused to renew the charter for the first bank of the United States, and the head of the Rothschilds Bank literally threatened the United States government, "If you do not renew our charter, you will be in a most disastrous war." Congress stood firm, and next year, 1812, the Rothschilds went to the government of Great Britain and said, "We will loan you all the money you need to recolonize the North American colony and force them back onto private banking, the Bank of England, and very low interest rates." And even though the United States won the War of 1812, it did drive them into so much poverty, they were forced to accept a second Bank of the United States. That's the one that Andrew Jackson shut down, for which he was almost assassinated. And once you begin to see this aspect of history, it all starts to make a lot of sense. And I've had a lot of email ever since I put that article out there where people are reading this or they're watching the video and they're saying, now all of a sudden, American history makes perfect sense. They can see this thread of continuity through it all. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't surprise attack. It wasn't crazed lone nut assassin. It's all about the banks enslaving people with their ink and paper and being willing to do anything to keep that system going, up to and including world wars.
A couple of good films that have a good synopsis on that were both made by Bill Still, who you know.
Yes.
And he made, the most recent one is, I'm just saying for everyone else, Jekyll Island the movie, not to be confused with Griffin's book. And of course, Money Masters, which was from 96 or 97. I used to have it on two VHS tapes, but that one still, it goes through, it's a 3-hour movie, but it goes through the whole history very thoroughly, the Rothschilds and other central bankers. And I think when people see that, the kind of the scales fall from your eyes, as Jeremy Bentham said, you have an epiphany, and like, really things start to make sense once you have that angle.
Yes, absolutely. Again, most Americans don't realize that the banking system that we have now is not what was intended by the founding fathers. And when I was in grade school, I got all the propaganda. We'd get the little film strips and the little phonograph record with the bell on it, and you'd turn the little crank on the film strip projector to tell us that the Federal Reserve is just the greatest thing that ever happened. It's the way banking is supposed to be. There's no other way to run the nation's economy, and just constant brainwashing, brainwashing, brainwashing. And I'm old enough to remember, you know, following the Kennedy assassination when the silver was taken completely out of all of our coinage. And the Federal Reserve notes used to have a little comment on them. This note is legal tender for all debts, public and private, and may be exchanged for lawful money at any bank. And following the Kennedy assassination, that whole part about being exchanged for lawful money was taken off, because from that day on, the Federal Reserve note borrowed at interest from the bankers became the lawful money of the United States of America.
It's one of the, I don't know, it's hidden right in plain sight, really. But I mean, I think your audience and my audience are aware of these things.
They very much are. And we're at the stage right now, of course, where especially following on the lies about Saddam's nuclear weapons, and especially with this absolute disaster of Obamacare, the American people are waking up and realizing that, hey, something has gone horribly wrong. They know they're being lied to by the government. They know they're being lied to by the corporate media. I think the last poll I saw is 2/3 of Americans no longer trust the corporate media to tell them what's going on. And that's why we're seeing an increase in audience to the independent media, where our audiences are going up. We obviously don't have the financial support the corporate media does. They're still trying to use their money to control the perceptions of the minds of America, but they're losing, and they're losing badly.
Do you think people really understand how filthy Obamacare is, or they just hate Obama anyway, and now they have
There's probably a great deal of overlap, but I think we're seeing some of Obama's staunchest supporters now going public, now that they've had to go through that Obamacare sign-up, and they're getting that sticker shock. And now it's come out that the people behind Obamacare knew back in 2010 that the majority of Americans were going to be forced to give up their current health insurance plan and buy more expensive policies. Obama was just on video all the time saying, no, no, if you like your plan, you can keep it. If you like your plan, you can keep it. Now he's trying to basically cover up for that lie by saying, oh, it's all the fault of those insurance companies and there's a bunch of bad apples out there. The software system is an absolute disaster. This company, CGI, has a horrible track record. I mean, they're very politically connected. They seem to keep on getting these hugely expensive contracts that deliver nothing but junk. The company actually has its roots up in Canada. They did the Canadian long gun registration system, went billions of Canadian dollars over budget, and was so messed up it was ultimately scrapped. They couldn't get it to work. Diabetes registration system. They did the assistance software for the Hurricane Sandy victims, where people could log in and apply for benefits, and so far only 1.5% of the allocated money has actually been handed out. And a company with this horrible track record got this $80 million no-bid contract just handed to them, apparently because Michelle Obama was buddy-buddy with one of their senior VPs in college.
They got a no-bid contract?
Yeah, it was a no-bid contract. It was just handed to them. And, of course, the cost overruns have now taken it up over $500 million, and they're now throwing hundreds of millions of dollars to every other company in the United States trying to fix this thing. But if anybody is familiar
We took that $500 million they just gave to Israel. We could have paid for that. Not that we should have to pay
it. What are you, some kind of an anti-Semite? What are you talking about stopping?
They just gave them an extra $488 million on top of the $3 billion they gave them at the beginning of the year.
Oh, it's more than that. I mean, most of the U.S. assistance to Israel is very much under the table. Somebody actually tallied it up and said it's not in the billions, it's in the trillions.
Oh, yeah. And, I just mean that openly.
They're just looting this country. But to get back to Obamacare, anybody who's ever had experience with large-scale software deployments understands that if you are working on a late software project, piling in hundreds, thousands of new programmers is just going to delay it even longer. I had John McAfee on my show And I'm absolutely in agreement with him. This needs to be completely scrapped and restarted from scratch. It'll be up and running faster if they do it that way. But, of course, Obama won't do that because then it's basically admitting that the pooch was screwed on this one right from the start. So they're just going to patch and patch and patch and patch and get it going and basically declare by imperial edict it is now working, and if you're having problems, it's because you're an idiot.
It's going to be like Flash and Apple. But something's got to give with healthcare. Like, the ACA is not a solution at all. I mean,
it isn't. It's a cash grab. It's a cash grab.
It's corporate welfare. I mean, it's mandatory. It's forcing people to buy insurance when it's unaffordable.
It's not
very simple. It's like telling people they got to buy something when they don't have the money for it.
It's not just the corporate cash grab. The U.S. government was looking at their share of that profits for the health insurance companies in the form of taxes, and they were estimating they were going to get $200 billion a year in new tax revenues, and they need that money to dangle in front of lenders, because now that the shutdown deal, if you will, has essentially voided the debt ceiling. Washington, D.C. is going on a borrowing binge, but they can't just go over to the Federal Reserve and say, create us a whole new bunch of money to spend, because that increases downward pressure on the dollar at a time when countries are already leaving it.
QE what, 7? No.
QE infinity. QE, exactly. I lost count a long time ago. But the problem is the U.S. government needs to convince foreign investors, private investors, foreign nations, foreign banks to loan the U.S. government even more money to try and deal with their crisis. And the only way they can do that is to say, look, we've got a new $200 billion a year in tax revenues coming in from Obamacare that we can use to make the payments on the new loans. And that hasn't happened. Apparently, they've only actually got 6 enrollments out of the entire system so far, and a huge public outcry. And this is why all of a sudden, I don't know if you noticed this, they're back to talking about global warming and carbon tax and all the rest of that, because they're not getting that $200 billion a year increase in tax revenues from Obamacare, not anytime soon. And they need money right now, because
global warming is the new hole in the ozone.
Yeah, something like that.
Or, you know, but we're all going to freeze.
Voiding the debt ceiling doesn't solve the problem if they can't get anybody to loan them any more money. And so,
but didn't they screw the pooch on that too by saying, look, we have to raise the debt ceiling or we won't be able to pay this, where they're basically admitting we can't pay this unless we borrow more money to pay it? I mean, paying debt with debt isn't paying debt.
I thought one of the stupidest things Obama said was raising the debt ceiling does not increase our debt. Really? Then you don't need to raise the debt ceiling.
No, the stupidest thing he said is we got to pay our bills. But like, you're not paying it if all you're doing is going further into debt.
I would take it one past that. What do you mean we, pale face?
Yes.
Because, you know, these debts you've run up are for things that don't benefit the American people. And I make a big deal on my website and my radio show about the concept of odious debt. This is a recognized principle in international law that the people of a nation are not responsible for debts incurred by the government for purposes other than the care of the nation.
Iceland.
Money borrowed to spend on war, money borrowed to spend on surveillance and spying, money borrowed to give to Israel, money borrowed to prop up private corporations and banks and so forth. The reality is that the U.S. government takes huge amounts of money from the American people, and very little of it is spent taking care of the American people or the nation. They've cut food stamps again. SNAP has been canceled. There's a lot of hungry people in this country. Driving around, you're going to see the dilapidated...
They cut a lot of WIC too.
I'm sorry?
The WIC program for pregnant
women. Yeah, that got cut too. The roads are full of holes. Bridges are collapsing. Buildings are crumbling. The American people's money are being taken away, and nothing is coming back to take care of the nation. And it's all going for Wall Street bailouts. It's all going for building the world's most insanely expensive and possibly least effective military machine, and all this money that's going to Israel. We're really in the final stages here, where it is going to start collapsing. And it's sad to see it happen, because I'm old enough to remember when this nation still really was the greatest nation on earth. We built the best products in the world. We put men on the moon. We fostered the world's greatest artists, scientists, musicians. Our culture was seen as an ideal. And these days, you know, they just had another incident with the Dreamliner cracking a windshield on landing. Entertainment and culture has very clearly moved to other countries. We're now importing TV shows from Britain instead of the other way around. Filmmaking has gone to other countries now. Hollywood's turning into little more than a ghost town and a tourist trap. Our economy is in a shambles where we have the worst trade imbalance of any industrialized nation.
We're still number one in a lot of things, though.
Number of incarcerated people per capita,
yep.
Military spending, and the number of people who believe angels are real.
Yeah. Yeah. Aren't you proud?
Oh, I'm just so proud. I cannot tell you. And what's really amazing, the U.S. government is betting on this idea that if they just put all the... We're in a wartime economy. They don't want to say it, but that's exactly where we are. Everything's going to the war machine. And the problem here is they're thinking dollars equals victory. And I remember there's this wonderful movie, if you've never seen it before, it's called The Pentagon Wars.
Yeah, Kelsey Grammer.
Kelsey Grammer, and it opens with him testifying before Congress about the extreme cost overruns of what's going on, and he says in his opening statement, we beat the Soviets.
This is a real, this happened.
Yeah, this is a real story. It's based on the real story of the development of the Bradley Infantry Fighting Vehicle, and it was a great book and a wonderful movie directed by Richard Benjamin. And Kelsey Grammer is paying this officer who's in charge of this development, and he opens his statement saying, we beat the Russians because we proved we could shovel the money into the fire faster than anybody else, which does seem to be the attitude that if we just throw enough money at something, we will prevail. But
the Russians beat themselves with the oligarch system. I just point out it had nothing to do with the arms race.
Well, actually, the Soviet Union came down because their people woke up to what was going on in their country via the samizdat. They didn't have an internet, but they did have fax machines that could network with each other, and that was a big part of why that came down. Now, as far as U.S. weapons development, we have the most expensive weapons on planet Earth, but lately they're all boondoggles.
Well, it's kind of like our health care. It costs more, but that doesn't mean it's more effective or better.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
just more expensive.
Right. Other nations are spending far less on their military, but they're spending it much smarter. And I'll give you a good example. The U.S. has already plunged something like $30 billion into the latest generation of the ballistic missile intercept system. And Russia spent just a tiny fraction of that to make their nuclear warheads maneuverable. So they, instead of just coming in a nice predictable arc, they weave back and forth, they dipsy-doodle, they corkscrew, which makes ballistic intercept impossible. And all of this very expensive U.S. hardware for ballistic prediction and intercept is now immediately obsolete. I would presume by now China has that same technology.
Well, look at the stealth gear they put all over the F-22s and 35s and all that. Not that those planes work anyway, but... And it was all defeated by the old school long wave radio. You can still pick it up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Our new weapons are just junked up. I remember a couple of years back, Claire and I went over to the Kaneohe Marine Air Base. There was an air show going on over there. Got to see the Blue Angels and Patty Wegstaff, who's just amazing in an airplane. And we were looking at some of their anti-submarine helicopters. And I was looking at one side where the ports for the sonobuoys are and noticed that half of them were blocked off by this big, bulky something or other bolted to the side of the helicopter. And I was talking to the crew, and I said, what is this thing? I mean, it's cut off half your sonobuoy ports. And they said, yeah, we know, but we were ordered to put it on there. It's somebody's big, you know, contract. We see these scandals all the time where inferior products are being sold to the U.S. government at huge markups and the soldiers are ordered to use them.
That's sort of the principle of that movie you were mentioning, too. They're saying that why be cost effective when the whole purpose of some military gear is just to procure profits for as many people in as many congressional districts as possible. So they had every bell and whistle, whether it's necessary or not.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Machines, and you just end up with a camel. You know, like when a group tries to design a horse, you end up with a camel. Everybody tacks on their own thing, or a guest I had earlier called it a Christmas tree, but it's just, you end up
now,
with
that's
complete
a junk. That's a good word for it. That's a good word for it. Some of these cockpits are so complicated now, the pilots are having trouble handling all of that equipment. They've tried to simplify it. I think the worst offender on that was the old F-104, where some of the controls were literally behind the seat and you had to fondle and feel for them without being able to see them.
Well, they got rid of the liquid air, and they have this weird thing where it comes out of the what is it, the fuel? They have like a sleeve that filters out the air, and the pilots are passing out now.
You're talking about the F-22.
Yeah, I can't remember the intake system name, but whatever. It's a convoluted system.
They still can't fix it. They've now had to impose ceiling limits on the F-22 so the pilots don't black out. The F-35, the most expensive aircraft the U.S. has ever developed, they've spent more than the gross domestic product of Australia to build this thing. It still has not actually been deployed into combat. The helmet fire control system still hasn't been delivered. It can't fly in the rain, or it loses its stealth. It can't fly in the fog, same reason. Can't fly near lightning, or the electronics quit working. The naval variant can't land on a carrier because they put the arrestor hook right where the main landing gear is. So the arrestor wire gets slapped down just as the hook comes over it.
You know what the solution for that will be? Instead of rearranging the hook, they'll rearrange the boat. So
they'll build a bigger carrier where it doesn't matter if it misses the hook or not. The F-35 is a lot heavier than it was supposed to be. It can't maneuver the way it was supposed to be. There's no visibility to the 6 o'clock. If it gets caught in a dogfight, it is already toast. The Pentagon has already said so. The Pentagon has already rewritten the requirements for the F-35 down so they can say this has now been successfully delivered. There was a story out of Great Britain the other day. Apparently, their latest generation aircraft are trying to use the same virtual helmet system the F-35 is, and they were having a flight test, and there was some kind of a goof, and all of a sudden the pilot was literally blinded by all the stuff that was being projected on the screens in front of his eyes, and he had to take the helmet off in order to land the plane safely.
We've had crashes too. We had crashes with the Ospreys as well, whatever that is. I don't know if you call it a helicopter, a plane, or what.
Well, they call it a tilt rotor, and there's a problem because the shaft that shares energy from one engine to the other, so in theory one engine can keep it in the air, although it can't. Those keep shattering and wrecking the wings and bringing them down. And I'll give you another good one. The Osprey was built on the idea that it could have a couple of Jeeps already loaded with men inside. It would land, the tail ramp would go down, the Jeeps would drive out and into combat. After it's already built and delivered, they realized the standard military Jeep won't fit in there. So now they've gone out and they're bidding for a new narrow Jeep that's still 2 years away from delivery. And it is. And I got to see some of the stuff up close and personal.
Is that on purpose or incompetence?
It's incompetence.
Yes,
these projects are too large. They're spread over too many contractors and too many companies. And there's just a complete lack of oversight and top-down planning. Everybody goes off in their own little direction so they can sell whatever it is that they're selling. And it's just all about making money. And many years.
Is there any incentive to change? Because like all they have to do is get them built. They don't even have to sell them, really.
No,
they can
no
sell
incentive.
Them by giving foreign aid and earmarking it to buy weapons.
That's exactly right, and that's a big part of it. You know, we're giving these countries the money to buy these things off U.S. manufacturers. And I got to see a lot of this a while back when I was still working in film effects and animation. I worked for a company called Robert Abel & Associates, and this was back when Reagan was first promoting the whole Star Wars concept. And we had a division within our company that was out seeking military contracts. We had a gentleman who came into the company with a lot of government connections, very spooky individual. And he got us hooked up doing development for Martin Marietta for their bid for the command and control for the Star Wars platform. And we literally went out and we hired the art director from the film War Games to recreate that wonderfully amazing set of the war room in Cheyenne Mountain. The real Cheyenne Mountain doesn't look like that, especially now that they've shut it down. But we built this whole set. We had all these simulated computer displays that were going on there, and it was really a shock. Now, being former NASA, I'd seen some of this stuff before, but for most of the people working on the project, we were flying out from L.A. to Colorado on a pretty much regular basis, and we would walk into this Martin Marietta. And for most of us, money is a dripping faucet, and these guys had fire hoses, and it was almost emotionally shocked to see just how much money they had to just throw around at this stuff.
Let me point out this is the Martin for Lockheed Martin now, for those that don't
yes.
know.
Yes, yeah. yes. It was amazing, especially when we're walking around areas where there's classified work, and you know the little red lights would go off on the ceiling, indicating uncleared people on the floor, and you'd see the filing cabinets slam and the knobs would turn. And I was already familiar with it from my NASA work, but for some of these other animators and filmmakers with us, they were like, "This was just such a shock to them to see this kind of a situation." But it was the amount of money they have to hand out. And it's all your tax money, and because it's just always flowing freely, they don't really care. The hideous amounts of wastes. It's just this huge, huge amount of funding, and they get the money and they look for reasons to spend it. Otherwise, their budget gets cut the next year. And I used to see this even back at NASA, and that was back in the days of mainframe computers, where you actually were billed for your computer time on a per second basis. Not a lot. But there was an accounting thing, and it came out of your budget. It wasn't just the computer sits there and everybody uses it. And so when we get to the end of the fiscal year, and everybody would leap on with their favorite little blue sky computer project to use up the computer time, because if there was any left over, it'd be taken away from you in the next budget.
Yeah, you don't get it in the next following
year. And you don't get it in the next budget. So you always spend your entire budget and say, wow, boy, man, we just barely made it. We need a little more next year. And it is. It's just this huge. What's the military-industrial complex? And until you see it with your own eyes, you don't realize what just a completely different way of living and thinking about money it is.
Well, it's big pharma, too. A friend of mine here in Japan, I just talked to him a few days ago. He's a musician, and he used to play at some of these events. And they would bring them all like to the Cayman Islands and put them all up in individual rooms. And these people would have like $10,000 centerpieces of flowers and all these things on the table. And they're only playing for like 20 people. You know, they have this big band and all that, all these professionals, and they're just playing for these really rich guys, and they're just throwing money everywhere. And these people aren't even paying attention to it. They're just gossiping with each other about whatever, as they have all these professional musicians.
Well, because for them, that's just normal. There's nothing special about
money
the environment.
Just comes.
It's the way they're always treated. They're used to lives of opulence and luxury because they're not paying for it. But until you see it with your own eyes, you don't realize just what an amazing, incredible difference between life as a private American citizen and life inside that whole military procurement development. It's just impossible to comprehend until you see it.
This is why they treat our military like a toy. Well, I wanted to talk about the NSA some, but we already talked for an hour almost. We had 6 minutes to get into NSA if you want to. I don't know. Can we do that?
Well, I do have one thing that will fit in 6 minutes. We're seeing the story being refocused on NSA spying on foreign leaders, which is what they're supposed to do. And they're trying to distract from the issue that the NSA is spying on law-abiding American citizens, which is a clear violation of the Fourth Amendment. Now they're trying to basically pass a law through Congress saying, yes, this is legal. No, it isn't. Congress is not allowed to pass unconstitutional laws. We don't need to wait for the Supreme Court to make that decision. They already ruled in Marbury versus Madison. Laws repugnant to the Constitution are automatically null and void. The NSA isn't going to follow any laws anyway. That's how we got into this mess. The NSA sees itself as above the law. They're serving the higher purpose of national security, keeping an eye on the threat, which is you.
Why isn't Clapper in jail for perjury? I mean, I like how the sly thing they did. I don't like it, but what I'm pointing something out where they said, no, we're not. We didn't spy on Google servers. We spied on right where they then come out of the servers.
Yeah. So that makes it all okay. I love that other one guy who came out and said, well, if you don't know your privacy is being invaded, then your privacy isn't being invaded. That's like me saying that as long as you don't find that TV camera I have hidden in your bedroom videotaping you and your wife going at it, then you shouldn't, you know, feel upset that your privacy was invaded. Yeah. And they're just throwing anything out there to try and justify it. But it comes down to this is a clear, unconstitutional, illegal action by the NSA. It delegitimizes not only the NSA, but the entire federal government.
Exactly. And I'd like to throw them out as well as the TSA. A bunch of useless. It's not for security. It doesn't. I mean, collecting all this metadata and all the things they're doing, if they actually were looking for terrorists, which they're not, because most terrorists are our own privateers, but you wouldn't be able to do it because you have such an overload of information that you would just be lost in the ether.
Well, they're now claiming that's the reason they didn't stop Boston, is they had too much information from law-abiding American citizens to wade through. But we already demonstrated at our website with our three NSA challenges that anybody with a little programming experience can develop their own encryption methodology, which will defeat the NSA. And there's a very good reason for that. I wish we had time to talk about it. Maybe that'll be the topic of our next interview.
Well, terrorists can always defeat those CCTV cameras. All you got to do is be on the government's payroll, and the cameras all go out magically. But always a pleasure, Mike, and good luck on your ebooks, and let me know wherever you end up. I mean, you're welcome. You have a place on my page. It's not as big as yours, but at any time. But I hope you have success and look forward to your new show. After you get your other projects done. And so keep in touch and let me know what's going on. And thank you always again for your support with whatreallyhappened.com.
All right.
Articles and such.
Well, thank you very much as well. I'll probably be back on the air somewhere within the next 2 weeks because I am getting a lot of offers right now.
Oh, really? That's good.
Yeah, I'll be back on the air within 2 weeks, certainly, because I know a lot of people were very unhappy that I'm off the air. And obviously, I need to get back on the air somewhere.
Well, you'll be on the air today because I'll put it up.
All right. Thanks an awful lot.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Be sure to bookmark ANC Report. Catch all the podcasts here. And, of course, your generous donations are always welcome. That's what keeps these programs afloat. Thank you.